So first of all, I think it's important because it deals with our appeal to people. Should we present Christianity as if it's easy when Jesus says it's hard, like in Matthew 7:14? And if that's so, should we talk about it as hard when Jesus says his yoke is easy? Which one should we do? When we're talking to somebody about becoming a Christian, should we say, you know what, you need to know that this is going to be really tough? Or do we need to say, you know, you need to know this is going to be great? How should we approach those who we're teaching? The other part is about our own attitude toward our faith and toward our own walk with Christ. See, if we are prepared for something easy and it turns out hard, how do we feel? We're discouraged. Go ahead. What's that? Yes. So there has to be an expectation that there's going to be some difficulty, and once we set that, then perhaps it's easier in some way, okay? But that the idea I'm trying to get across is that if we are expecting it to be easy because of Matthew 11:30, and it turns out to be difficult because we know that there are some aspects of being a Christian that are difficult, then we might end up being super discouraged, right? But on the other hand, if we're expecting it to be really hard and we find it easy, we might feel like we're doing it wrong. Okay, well, I thought this was supposed to be really hard. It's not hard. And in fact, sometimes we have that experience where sometimes people can say something to us. I know a lot of people seem to, when someone is baptized, they'll come up to them and they'll say, now things are about to get hard. Now comes the hard part, almost to like deflate the balloon of the excited new Christian. And well, what if it's not hard? What if there's a joy that buoys them along and they don't feel that? You know, that would be also something where they would be concerned. Maybe we're doing things differently here. Skip.
Now, there's another possibility in thinking that it's easy that you end up, and to borrow a phrase from a theologian, you cheapen grace.
Yeah.
You know, you think it's easy, so you don't deal with the problems you should be dealing with.
That's a good point. When we think it's easy, then we sort of brush aside the hard parts of it, including facing our own sin, getting rid of sin, trying to make real change in our life. That's true. The other thing I want to say about this, about why I would ask the question, is I think part of this is about how much we value our faith. So have you ever noticed that there are things that we like and things that we value? And we tend to like things that are easy, but we tend to value things that are hard. So, I don't know about you, but I like candy bars. I like them, but I don't value them. They're not worth a lot to me, right? So, getting a candy bar, relatively easy, but not something that I'm going to be excited about. However, doing something that I'm really proud of, how often is it that you do something that's really easy and then you're proud? You don't feel anything about it. You don't value that. And it seems to me, something like physical fitness, okay? We'd all like to be physically fit, but we don't value it unless we work hard to get it. And then we have great respect for that. We appreciate that. And it seems to me it affects us if we think that what we're doing isn't really that much, that important, that difficult, anything to do with anything that we would really value, then we're not going to think that much of it. So, is Jesus' way easy or hard? The answer to that is yes. Now, first, I want to take a look at this side. Is Jesus' way hard? And what I'm going to do is just sort of give some questions. And the answer to all the questions is yes. So I'm giving you the answer key. Okay. So the answer to all the questions is yes. But I want you to see some aspects of which, if we look at the definition of the way of Jesus, we would say, yes, there are some hard things about it. So when we get to the other side, we'll see that what Jesus is doing is emphasizing different aspects of walking with him. So, first of all, does it demand a high level of commitment? Yes. Okay, yeah, I gave you the answers already, right? So, yes, the answer is yes. Let's go back to Matthew 7. I think that's really the question behind the passage in Matthew 7, where he talks about what it is, what it's going to mean for us to walk on this path, the way of Jesus. Matthew 7 and verse 13 enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide, and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many, for the gate is narrow, and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. So the question behind the passage is, if the way is difficult, am I willing to give the commitment necessary to keep going even though it's hard? Am I willing to do it even though I'm going to be maybe alone or with a very small group? On one side, he says in verse 13 that the way is easy and it takes no effort, it takes no commitment to go to destruction. You're just going to walk down that path easily, but it's going to take, I think of swimming upstream, to go down the hard path and the narrow gate and all of that that leads to life. Let's look in Luke 13. Luke 13 has a parallel passage that talks about this same question. Luke 13, verse 23. Luke 13, 23 says, someone said to him, Lord, will those who are saved be few? Now notice that question. It is a question that prompts this teaching from Jesus, where in Matthew 7 we didn't have any questions. Will those who are saved be few? And he said to them, strive to enter through the narrow door, for many, I say to you, will seek to enter and will not be able. So he describes a difference between seeking and striving. And he says there are many who are going to seek to enter and not be able, so you strive. And that word strive is a much more intense word than seeking. It speaks to how competitors in the different games, you know, the Olympic Games or the Isthmian Games, used to compete. They would strive for the prize. They would fight. They would run. They would work. It was a very intense word. It is the word from which we get our word agonize. And so he is saying, this is something that's going to demand a high level of commitment, and in a way that's going to weed people out. Because there are people who are unwilling to give that high level of commitment. What's going to happen to them? Well, they're going to seek to enter and not be able. So there's going to be something that separates them, and that something is, how much do you want it? How committed are you to it? So is that difficult? Yeah, it's going to cost a lot. It's going to demand a lot. And so in that sense, if you were to say, well, is that hard? Yeah, that's hard. And it's a lot to me like, and I keep coming back, I know I mentioned the games, I come back to the question of athletics, and I've told you guys a lot that I'm trying to get to the Boston Marathon. Someday, maybe if I can keep my Achilles intact, I could do that. Okay, but there is a level of commitment that is demanded that separates casual runners or occasional runners from the guys that do awesome things. Now, there's some talent there, too, but there is a commitment level where you say, you know what, I'm not going to be just playing at this. I want to really do it. And so there is a commitment level that begins to affect other decisions you make and begins to affect how you spend your time, the things that you talk about, the things you spend your money on. Okay, all of that begins to be affected because I really want this. That's what Jesus is after here. So there is a high level of commitment Jesus requires. He never sugarcoats that. He tells them, you count the cost to be sure you're willing to pay before you come to me. So is that hard? Yes, that's hard. Second question, are there challenges to our faith? And the answer is? Yes. All right, good. You guys are getting it. All right, Matthew 13. Matthew 13 is where I want to show you this, where Jesus thinks about the faith and how faith grows, and he talks about it in terms of challenges or obstacles. Matthew chapter 13. We're about to read this in our readings, on our daily Bible readings, in this parable chapter in Matthew 13. This is the parable of the sower. Matthew 13 and verse 5 says, other seeds fell on rocky ground where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up because since they had no depth of soil, but when the sun arose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. So here are some obstacles to the seed's growth. Okay, so you have there the rocky ground where there's not a lot of soil. Then you have the sun rising up and scorching. And then you have in verse 7, the thorns growing up and choking. So verse 20 of Matthew 13, he explains, Matthew 13 and 20, as for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy, yet he has no root in himself, but endures for a while. When tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately he falls away. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. So there is an assumption behind Jesus' teaching that when the Word of God is sown in someone's heart, there are going to be challenges to it, threats to it. Whether we're talking about thorns growing up and choking it out, he's talking about in verse 22, the deceitfulness of riches and the cares of the world, but there are challenges to our faith. So that makes faith hard. It makes continuing to grow difficult because we're not just on a clear path. There are going to be things that try to impede us along the way. So if we were to grow seed on ground that was rocky, we might say, you know what, that's hard ground. Or if we were to grow it among thorns and, you know, it begins to have problems growing up and sprouting up, we might say, you know what, that's hard ground to grow something on. So the reason it would be hard would be because of these challenges. So if we ask the question, is Jesus way hard? Well, in that sense, yes, it is hard. And the New Testament has a lot to say about persecution. We've talked about that in recent weeks. There are scoffers, there are evil people who discourage us. We often have to wade through messages that keep coming at us that are discouraging us or telling us we're wrong or telling us there are other things that we need to pay attention to. But whatever it is, they all come down to challenges that we're going to have to brush aside. All right? So is Jesus way hard? Yes, there are challenges. Do we have to go against the majority? Yes. Yes, we do. That's clear from Jesus' statement. You remember? Will those who are saved be few? And Jesus essentially says, yes, you strive to enter because many will seek to enter and not be able. Or when Jesus talks about those who go down the broad road because it's so easy are many. Those who find the narrow path, those who go down that road that's difficult will be few. So why is it hard to go against the majority?
Well, we often just seek the approval of others.
We often seek their approval. Okay, we're kind of used to the majority. When we do something, don't you do this like I do? You're in a social situation. You kind of look around and see, what is everybody else doing? Okay, am I supposed to be in this line or that line? Okay, well, what is everybody else doing? You know, we kind of do that naturally, right? Where we say, I probably want to be in with everybody else. I probably want to do what everybody else is doing. And everything about us is affected by that. The way we dress is affected by the way people dress in the places where we've been and where we're going. Okay? We are taking our cues from others. And so it's very easy for us to have that mentality. Usually it doesn't steer us wrong, but in spiritual things it can be dangerous because it can lead us to thinking that if other people think it, it must be good. When in reality, Jesus is saying, you're going to have to walk against the crowd, against the grain. So, do we have to go against the majority? Yes. And is that hard? Yes, that's hard. And that makes Jesus' way hard. It makes it where we're going to have to choose to be, if you want to say countercultural, that's fine. If you want to say weird, that works too. We're going to have to be different. And so that makes it difficult. You got something to say? Yes. No, that's hard. That's hard. Going against people and having to face people makes that difficult. What do you think it was easy for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to be the only ones that didn't bow down? That wasn't easy, was it? And when you think about that, it's one thing to say when it's just them surrounded by some other Jews, say, hey, I'll never bow down to that statue. It's different when you're in a huge crowd of people and nobody else is doing it. There is a pressure there that we need to understand that's going to be part of, resisting that is going to be part of walking with Jesus. All right? Is Jesus way hard? Yes. Do we have to resist natural impulses? Yes, we do. We do. So this is Titus 2 and verse 11 and 12. For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in the present age. So there is a renunciation. I renounce ungodliness and worldly passions. This is who I used to be, but grace teaches me I'm not going to be that person anymore. I'm done with that. I deny that. So is that difficult? Yes, that means I'm going to have to go against what I used to do and what I naturally want to do. Okay, the things that I would do were I living my life without the influence of Christ, I would definitely do them. But now I have to say, no, I'm not going to do them because of Christ. So we have to resist natural impulses and renounce ungodliness and worldly passions. When Jesus talks about the change that has to be made in us, he talks about it as us becoming an entirely new person. Okay, so I'm thinking of John 3 and verse 3. Truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. Born again, be a new person, be completely different. Sometimes that's talked about as unless you are converted or turn again and become like little children. Sometimes that's talked about as in we're babies and we need to grow up. All of those images emphasize that we change completely. So, is that easy? No, that's not easy. That's a hard thing to allow ourselves to be changed by the Spirit of God into something that we were not and resist those inclinations and habits. So is it hard to be a Christian? Yes. But is Jesus' way easy? Yes. Yes, it is. Okay? So I want to talk about that other side. Let's go to Matthew 11. So is Jesus' way easy? Yes. Am I free? Am I free? Yes. When I walk with Jesus, I am free. Matthew 11 and verse 28. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So Jesus is saying my way is easier and better. But I believe what he is saying here is comparative. Okay, so it is better than the other way, the other yoke. You are weary and heavy laden. You lay that yoke down and take on my yoke. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. Now the Jews, when you talk about verse 28 there, it says, all who labor and are heavy laden. Well, the Jews talked about the law itself as a yoke, a burden. Okay, a yoke is an instrument of work that would lay on their shoulders so that they could work. This is a heavy burden. And they talked about it that way. Sometimes, in a negative way, I'm thinking of what Peter is saying here, Acts 15 and verse 10. He says, now therefore, why are you putting God to the test by placing a yoke on the neck of the disciples that neither our fathers nor we have been able to bear? He's talking about the law and the requirements of the law. We couldn't keep them. Our fathers couldn't keep them. Why are you throwing them on the disciples now and making them keep them? But the idea of a yoke that you can't bear is an awfully depressing idea, isn't it? It's too heavy for you. It grinds you down. You just can't keep up under it. And when Jesus says, my yoke is easy, he is saying, living with me is not like that. When Matthew records Jesus talking about the Pharisees, he says, they tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move them with their finger. So in this section in Matthew 11, Jesus is about to talk about the Sabbath. In Matthew 12, there's going to be two scenes about the Sabbath. And I believe there's a connection there, that not only is it that the law is a heavy burden, but in particular, the way the Pharisees had interpreted the law so that there are all these different rules and regulations that you can't grab the grain and you can't walk so far and all these different things, that they become a burden where it's awfully difficult. And I think that's what he's talking about here, that you lay them on people's shoulders, but you do what you want. You know, you don't even lift them with one of your fingers. So that is, of course, a condemnation of the Pharisees, but it also means Jesus is concerned about those people who are laboring under the law. Right, finding righteousness on our own is not just hard, it's impossible. We're not going to be able to do it. I think the other aspect of this is that when you were a Jew, and Jesus is speaking, of course, to Jews, you knew what was expected of you, but you could never do it. And there was no power in the law to overcome sin. There was nothing that could be done in the law to say you can be set free from sin. This is what Jesus says in John 8, 34, 36. Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. So if the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. We have to be set free from sin. I believe that's what Romans 7 and Romans 8 are talking about. We are slaves to sin until someone sets us free. Who is the one who can set us free? Only Jesus. He's the only one. The law could not do that. So just imagine that. Imagine having a law that you have to obey perfectly in order to be saved. You're continually worried about keeping it perfectly. Every thought, every word, every interaction is another opportunity to mess it up. But you always do. And when you do, you sin, and sin is in charge of you, in charge of your body and mind. You want to be right with God, but you cannot do what is required. That is quite a burden. But Jesus' way is about freedom, that we don't have to live that way. And we are free from that. Paul says this in Galatians 5:1, "For freedom Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore. Do not submit again to a yoke of slavery." Notice the yoke image again. He is saying that living under the law is carrying a burden you can't carry. It won't work. But Christ has set us free. So, why go back to something else? Jesus' way is easier. He set us free from that. Is it better than the way of the wicked? Yes, yes, it's better than the way of the wicked. So I've got a bunch of verses I'm going to put on the board here. The description in the New Testament of the way of the wicked, especially the description of the Gentiles and the way the Gentiles live, is different from what we've been reading in Matthew 11. That's the Jew who's trying to keep up the law and trying to do that, but it's too much for him. But for Gentiles, it is wickedness. And they go down the rabbit hole. And the descriptions of it are sad and tragic. This is, I got two of them there. Well, we'll read the first one first. "But what fruit were you getting at that time from the things of which you are now ashamed? For the end of those things is death." I love the image of fruit. I believe what he is saying in Romans 6:21 is, what did you do that you were proud of? How could you hang your head high? What could you do and say, yes, this is something good? There was good that we did before we came to Christ, but it was far outweighed by the bad. And so he says, the things of which you are now ashamed. We look back on the scenes of our life when we lived in sin, in shame. We don't look back on them and say, wow, I'm really glad I did that. I want everybody to know about that because it was really great. This is Titus 3:3, "For we ourselves were once foolish, disobedient, led astray, slaves to various passions and pleasures, passing our days in malice and envy, hated by others and hating one another." Colossians 1:21, "And you who were once alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds." Colossians 1:21, alienated, hostile, and doing evil. And Proverbs 13, this is the New King James, "Good understanding gains favor, but the way of the unfaithful is hard." Hard. Living enslaved, feeling desperately guilty, angry, but we're not sure who we're angry at, frantically searching for the next pleasure, someone to satisfy, something to satisfy or distract or give us a high, and then followed by the deep depression of having to wake up to what we've done and wake up to who we've become. And then we carry around bitterness as if we are victims when we know deep down we're the ones who have done it. That isn't easy. So compared to that, is Jesus' way easy? Yes, it is. John Calvin said, "The torture of a bad conscience is the hell of a living soul." Do you remember what it was like to have a bad conscience? A conscience that convicted you, a conscience that you couldn't wish away or get rid of. That feeling is hard. So is Jesus' way better than the way of the wicked? Yeah, we don't have to live that way. Does it give me a higher purpose? Yes, yes it does. Jesus' way gives me a higher purpose. So in this section of Matthew 11, Jesus talks about revealing the secrets of heaven that God has kept from the wise and understanding, revealed them to babes. And then he says, you come to me and you learn from me. Something greater to learn about. Something greater than just spending all our time thinking about ourselves, focusing on what we like and what we're doing, where we learn from the greatest man who ever lived about the God who made everything that there is. That's a higher purpose. And the last thing I want to ask, Do I have something greater to look forward to? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Now, this is about thinking not just about how hard the way is. Remember Matthew 7? Where does the way go? The hard path leads to life. Remember? Boy, it would be awfully short-sighted of us to say, I don't want to go on the hard way and not think about the destination. Where am I headed? What do I have to look forward to at the end of the path? It leads to life. And when I follow Jesus' path, I look forward to life. And that changes me because it means that if the path is hard in this moment, I'm still looking forward to where the path is going. I'm not just focusing on this moment. And that is the perspective, of course, of the New Testament writers. This is Paul in 2 Corinthians 4. For this light, momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparisons. We look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. So, this is a principle we need as we answer the question, is Jesus' way easy or hard? Do you see it? There is an affliction, but it's light and momentary, and it's preparing for us an eternal weight of glory. So is that easy? Comparatively, yes. That's what he's saying. Compared to alternatives and compared to the glory that's to be revealed, yes, it is easy. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. I think Zach talked about this last week, didn't he? I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Through Jesus, we anticipate life, resurrection, coming to the Father. Who else promises that? Where else are you going to go to get resurrection and solve the problem of death? It just doesn't happen. That's what's at the end of Jesus' way. So is Jesus' way easy or hard? Yes. Yes. Okay. So, at the end of it all, there's no contradiction here. What we need to see is we need to be realistic about the challenges of being a Christian and yet be optimistic about how superior it is to everything else. Thanks for your attention. We're going to break. We'll have class at 9:45.